Welcome, homeschool mamas. Hi, I'm Teresa from CapturingTheCharmedLife.com, and I'm here to help you, new homeschool mama, mama that's been around for a while doing homeschooling. I'm here to help you turn your challenges into your charms. That's my goal. That's the intention behind my blog, behind my website presence, Capturing the Charmed Life. Today, I want to introduce you to a little show and tell section of one of the most important aspects of my homeschool. Yoga pants. These yoga pants were given to me by my daughter, my second daughter. Not exactly my style, but they're actually kind of cute. And like I say, I am not really the yoga pant type. I'm the kind that doesn't really have the backside to support a Lululemon, but it turns out I am fitting my 17-year-old daughter's pants, so that's pretty good. And these yoga pants are one of many pairs that I now own. And I can tell you that I most definitely did not own yoga pants before I homeschooled. But there's beauty in yoga pants. They can become pajamas. You can maybe throw some cute top on and head to the grocery store. They become what I think of as a homeschool mom's uniform. So, welcome to my wardrobe. I don't know if you've been around long enough, but my How to Homeschool 101 course, I am wearing this top every single time. It's called my recording top. So I'm going to have to maybe like branch out and buy a different color next time. I don't usually wear dressy clothes. I don't usually do my makeup. I don't usually do all that stuff. You'll even see that I wear my glasses and I wear my hair back in a ponytail on a typical homeschool morning. I just finished chatting for a podcast interview with Linda from Homeschool Fun with Linda, all the way over on the other side of the coast, other side of the continent in Florida. And she said that what she does as a self-care strategy is to put makeup on and to get dressed. I have yet to do that with regularity, except for the days that I'm recording something, I'm connecting with one of you, or I am heading outside on the town with my husband. Otherwise, not a lot of makeup going on here. That's a homeschool mom's experience, life. Ask the audience. I have asked if people would share their questions, and I got a really great question last week that I have had a hard time thinking through because it was so long ago that this applied to me. But I look back in my blog, and since I pretty much started writing as soon as I started homeschooling, it was almost like a requirement every Wednesday night going to Starbucks, my journal, my pen, writing everything that I thought. It was like a way to decompress. And I started writing about homeschooling. I started writing about the pros and what I perceived at that time as the disadvantages of homeschooling. And last week, someone asked, what was your experience or what was your transition from school into homeschool? My experience with school, obviously, I have been conventionally schooled myself. My husband has as well. We both have post-secondary school. My husband has postgraduate, so we've got a lot of academics under our belts. We have four kids. My oldest daughter, who is now 19, went to a private Christian school until the end of grade two. And until the end of grade two, she was essentially schooled, and then my second daughter went to kindergarten, and it was at the transition between grade two to grade three for my oldest, or kindergarten to grade one for my second, that we went into homeschool. My third and fourth children have never officially been to school. I guess you could say when I had that one afternoon where I was volunteering at my daughter's kindergarten, both of those two kids joined me. So they had an afternoon of school, I guess. My third daughter is actually intending to go to high school in the fall. We'll see how that develops. So my experience transitioning from a public school to homeschool I'll share a few thoughts with you. First, I would say that I had spent 2 years reading on homeschooling. So mentally, I was prepped to do something that seemed really countercultural. At least where I was, there wasn't a ton of homeschoolers. In Canada, homeschooling isn't unusual, but it's not quite as popular and kind of more on the mainstream side as it is in the States, comparatively. My experience was that I anticipated I wasn't going to have to bring my kids to the bus every morning. And I was really relieved by that because I spent some time bringing my kids to the school or to the school bus. I had to get everybody out in a wintry day. I had to get them all dressed up, all four of them even, or I guess three of them. I had to get all of them ready and dressed to go to the bus just down the block a few blocks away, or I had to drive them to the school, which was about a 15-20 minute drive. And that usually interrupted my baby's nap, or it forced me to get all three kids out by, I can't remember if it was 8 o'clock or something in the morning. And it seemed really stressful. I never had the dishes done. People were barely fed. I was always trying to find, you know, some permission form that needed to be signed or some homework or something. I had to go search people's bags. I had to make sure that everybody had all of their things packed in their backpacks. We'll transition into homeschool. My schedule is entirely free. I get to determine how I do pretty much everything. I remember that there was a really cool kindergarten soup and cracker night where the kindergarten kids, my second daughter's class, was going to present all of the families and the kids with the soup and crackers that they'd made in kindergarten. It didn't fit with our schedule. To this day, I still love that kindergarten teacher and look forward to kayaking with her on the river next to me. But it didn't fit our schedule, and we were already cooking at home, so soup and crackers was kind of like, okay, yeah, it's cool, but we literally cook all the time. When we started homeschooling, cooking was like one of those activities that always happens. I learned quickly to let my kids have time and space in the kitchen to do what they wanted to do. Really, I was one of those moms that wish I could have sat or been in the kitchen with them, showing them how to do it, but I was too controlling and too frustrated if they didn't do it the way that I wanted them to do it. So I learned to just leave the kitchen. There was only one mistake by each child when it came to adding too much baking soda to baking. You only need to do that once to realize you really can't do that again because whatever you just made tastes like soap. So really, they made very few mistakes. They really learned to cook. In fact, to this day, I do very little cooking. And when my second daughter leaves home next year, I am going to have to spend a lot more time in the kitchen, or we're going to have to take up fast food. Don't think that's going to happen. Or maybe my third daughter will get into cooking more than she already does. Teaching your kid to cook is fabulous, and it happens naturally in the home if you step back and don't take so much control. So what I learned is that there's a lot of really practical living skills at home that happen naturally that are sort of forced or seem kind of contrived in the school system. There's home ec class, sometimes there's sewing class, sometimes there's, what's that class called? The one where they're doing hands-on, maybe mechanics or things like that, or woodworking. Well, until this year, we didn't naturally do any of that stuff at home, but we have built a few things, a woodshed, we've built chicken fence. We've done some things like that. My son was working with wood last week, trying to build a Chinese checkers board. And that kind of thing develops naturally in the household, especially if you're naturally gifted in a certain area. So you can learn those things at home naturally, and you don't have to have a class like in a school. Like I said, yoga pants, that kind of comes with a homeschool mom territory. But you know what also comes with the territory? Wearing pajamas. A lot of kids in a lot of pajamas. And even though for the last number of years, I ask my kids to do their top five in the morning, which includes, it's pretty basic stuff, but which includes doing and getting into their real clothes. I haven't always done that. They have actually sometimes spent the entire day in pajamas until we go out to do extracurriculars. There was one time when a new neighbor had come over to our house and my youngest son was completely naked and the three older girls were all half dressed. And she came over to see what homeschool was like. It was great. Yeah, this is like our normal everyday. And maybe that was when I started getting them dressed in the morning. I don't know. But there are a lot more pajamas and there's a lot more yoga pants for mom. There are no indoor shoes. In our public schools, there's an expectation that you buy indoor shoes that are suitable for the gym. I don't have indoor shoes. This is a concern if anybody ever needs them. So we have to go to Walmart and buy a cheap pair or something. We don't buy indoor shoes. The kids always have hot lunches. I know some schools, there are hot lunches for all kids. In our homeschool, that usually means that the kids made that hot lunch because as years have progressed and I've become more comfortable with them cooking, they're all very capable of cooking. And I also have found other activities for myself to do over the years, then I definitely am expecting that people will figure out how to make food. My youngest being 11, he's been cooking for quite some time now. So I would say, okay, so there's no drives that don't really interrupt our day. I don't have to interrupt kids' naps. They can sleep when they want to. We get to decide what we want to do instead of what a school says that they want to do. Sometimes schools have some really cool activities for kids and they are inspired. And I can get those on a weekend. I can get those when I go into the city. I can get those if my kids want them. I can find a way to get those cool activities too, just not in the same context, not in the same way that the school is delivering them. I can still get my kids, you know, a choir, or I can get them a trip to the science center, or I can get them, I don't know, you know, like there is nothing that I'm missing except possibly organized high school football, which I don't think is going to happen for my youngest interest anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I add extracurriculars whenever I want to. I don't have to be influenced by the school day. So where you normally go in a lineup, pick up your child at about 2:33, 3:30, and you drive to an extracurricular, you go home, get some food, come back to the extracurricular. At least this is what I've heard a lot of people do. This isn't my experience. We can do that. Certainly as the kids have become teenagers, they're definitely more motivated to go into the world and do more stuff. They do a lot more stuff. But I don't have to be doing my extracurricular activities during the evening. I can do it during the day when it fits my schedule. I remember in grade 2 sitting in class watching my oldest daughter's science class. We were, you know, classic class for our part of the world. We have about 25 kids in a class typically. There's a teacher in the front. Kids have separate desks. I think they were sharing desks or sharing sort of like a two kids to a shared space. And these kids were moved about if there was too much noise, if they're doing too much talking or getting distracted. But mostly they sat with the same seat partner if they were quiet. So that would mean that my daughter was sometimes moved around. And I remember being at the back of the room with her, sitting with her. And I don't remember if I was leaving to an appointment, but I was there a little bit early, so I got to be part of the class. And it was a discussion, a science discussion related to popping, air popping popcorn kernels. We waited. The very kind, very engaged teacher had to encourage people over the course of 10 minutes to be quiet, not talk, and just watch the popcorn pop. No. I love that teacher. And I know that my daughter loved that teacher, but just not something that I need to do in my homeschool. We don't have to wait. If somebody is doing a science experiment that is boring to them, then we can find some other things to do while we're doing it, or we just don't even do the popcorn experiment. We are very focused in what we like to do, and we also don't have any waiting time. There isn't that dead space where one child is waiting for another. There's no, can I go to the bathroom? There's no, I'm hungry, mom, can I eat? There's just like a little bit more free flow, and there isn't a lot of wasted space in our days. There are no tests in our homeschool, unless, and of course, if a child wants them, and yeah, it has actually happened, where I have had a child say, but I want to know what it's like to be tested. I want to know how much I know on something. The reason I haven't done it is because I'm working with them. So I have a really clear sense of what they know or they don't know, or give me enough time, you know, a few days, I will discover that a child has, you know, if I'd asked them to do a math worksheet for 15 minutes in a day, I will learn that they weren't doing it or that they don't understand it. When you're with your kids enough and you're engaging your kids enough, none of that gets lost on you. And in a home environment, parents always want their kids to understand something. So the tendency is to keep working with that child until they do understand something. If there is, you know, prescribed academic type stuff that really does need to be discussed. In our homeschool, we do a fairly routine math program. And when kids don't understand something, I don't give them a test, find out the percentage, write it down in my report card for them. I keep working with them until they understand it. I can tell when their mistakes are just, I'm too tired, I'm not spending enough time thinking through what I'm doing, and I really don't get this concept. So tests aren't a thing. Grades aren't a thing. Even though if you meet me at the grocery store and you say, hey, to one of my kids, what grade are you in? They'll still give you a grade. And they'll do that because they're identifying that they are part of the general public. They understand that they're about to be in grade 7, grade 10, and grade 12. And they are still identifying as being in a grade. They don't want to be set apart and weird homeschoolers compared to everybody else. But according to our actual provincial law, they are registered homeschoolers and they don't actually have an official grade because we don't engage the provincial curriculum like students in school or students that are distance learning with the province. So they still have a grade. They'll still say they're great. It doesn't quite have the same relevance, I guess, for my kids because we kind of just follow their interests. I definitely include their interests in every step of the way. And I'm very aware when they don't want to do something or they don't want to engage a certain way or they prefer learning in a certain way. I definitely, as a homeschooled parent, I'm very aware of my children compared to what I was when I had my kids in school. I didn't really know where their strong points were and or where their strengths were or where their challenges were. And of course, there's always an exploration about my kids. It'll be a lifelong one. It's not like I'm God and I understand everything about them, but I know an awful lot about them. And I definitely know an awful lot about their learning. I would tell you that we have fewer viruses. We really have, though. We've got unwell or, we have had fewer illnesses in our home since we have been at home and not schooled. Our kids have an awful lot of extracurriculars, and yet maybe it's just like sitting in a classroom for 6 hours in a school for 6 hours with a bunch of other kids. They just don't have that kind of exposure most of the time, unless my oldest was in a college class, and they just don't get as sick as often. They definitely have more time compared to even when my oldest daughter was in grade two, I can remember her coming home from school on the bus and being very edgy and exhausted and tired. I would have told you she was introverted and she just was too tapped by what was going on. But she has since told me that no, she wasn't introverted. And at that time, I remember chatting with somebody that an adult that was working with a special needs child in her classroom. And this lady saying that she's actually very much like a social butterfly. And, you know, that fits now for me, but she was really extended. She was not energized after that many hours and that many months of being in a classroom. When you're at home, kids have a lot of solitude. They have a lot of options for solitude. They also have a lot of options for activities, of course. So don't worry about the socialization thing. There are many social opportunities for homeschooled kids as there are school kids. Sometimes we really have to create that. We certainly have to build communities intentionally. We're not naturally connected to people in the school the same way as homeschool groups. There are places I know that homeschool families are working together in co-ops. They have really predictable homeschool groups, and I'm not in one of those places. And there's also a lot of places that don't have that. So we're intentional about creating our community as homeschoolers, which is a benefit because I can actually include the people in our world that we want to include. So I would tell you that those are probably the biggest differences between the transition from school into homeschool. Not everybody has this scenario, but we happen to travel a lot in the first 7 years of our homeschooling years, about half our time. So we went, you know, within the province, we went right across Canada, we went all the way to Prince Edward Island, and we went all the way up to the Arctic and flew into Tuktoyaktuk, what was an ice road town at one point. We've been all the way down to Chicago and Georgia, the state of Georgia, into California and Florida and all over different places in the States, and into Africa twice. We went into West Africa and both West Africa and Eastern Africa in remote areas for volunteer trips, and we spent bookended those trips with trips around Europe and did special trips into Europe as well. So we've done a lot of traveling, and for sure it accommodates travel really easily, and it is so much fun to do with your kids. Amazing family memories. We also have had time to volunteer. I know that you can do that when you have kids at school as well, but we just have time in the day when we've been able to go to the senior center and chat with people, get to know people, and just be there with kids because they don't always get to see kids. So there's time for volunteering. And of course, you get to know your children really well if you're with them all of the time. So there's a big difference between school and homeschool. Probably the most surprising thing for me over the last 15 years is that I don't really think about the differences anymore. And I'm not even really aware that what I'm doing is really different. I do when people's jaws drop and they go, wow, you homeschool. But that hasn't happened for the last number of months because I think everybody has had an experience where they feel like they have been with their kids a lot at home. And though they might not have a true homeschool experience the way that we've had it outside of the COVID thing, they definitely know what it's like to be with their kids. So they either love it or hate it or want to pursue it or definitely find a bus or can I sell the kids? Y'all have strong opinions on that, of course, as time, you know, you've had that opportunity. But that's been about my experience of a transition between public school and homeschool. So frequently asked question is, what is deschooling? For this section of my chat or my discussion with you, I would love to hear your questions. So you're welcome to drop those questions into my Facebook page. You can find it under Homeschool Mama Self-Care. I've recently changed the name on my Facebook and Instagram page from homeschool, or from capturing the charm life to homeschool mama self-care. And you can drop questions into any space there, and I will definitely get back to you. But frequently asked question is, what is de-schooling? Have you heard that phrase yet? It can be described in a bunch of different ways. It's like a slowly evolving concept in the homeschool world that really means how to get out of educational mindsets that are conventional school. In other words, how to get away from thinking about what an education is outside the way the school defines it or your local system defines it. That means like grades and tests and being with the same aged peers, about 25 of them, for 6 hours in a day, for about 8 months in a year, that you have to do science and history, or social studies, I should say, science and social studies and language arts and math, and, you know, all the conventional subjects, and that they have to be taught in a certain way, that maybe there's lectures and there's testing and there's memorizing and, you know, all the conventional ways of school. We know them well because most of us have been schooled. I'm 15 years in to my homeschool story. In fact, I'm probably really officially homeschooling only one child this year because my oldest is going into grade 12 and she's very independent. She is essentially like a college student. And if my second goes to high school for grade 10, then I have only my grade 7 child, my youngest. And 15 years later, and I'm still challenged to set aside all those conventional ideas about what an education is and about what school means and what an educator means or a teacher, or if we should do testing or grades or all of that stuff. I'm still challenged by it. Sometimes I find that the words that I choose with you and the way that I'm sharing things with you, I'm encouraging myself to still keep thinking like that. In my How to Homeschool 101 course that I'm putting together, I'm very aware that I share that our goal is to let go of those ideas of school, and yet I'm still showing you how to translate typical school subject material into learning opportunities and not think like a schooled person, which is really hard because it's the way we've been taught. I explore the idea of what is an education anyways, because I've had 6 subjects that I've watched for the last 15 years, and that's me and my husband and our 4 kids. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about what's the purpose of an education. What's the goal, like the long-term goal? If it is to get a college degree and that's the only reason, then sure, you can do the conventional approach. Just go get your diploma by going to a school and get the college degree. But I have to ask, what's the purpose of the college degree? So that you can have a profession and be successful, so that you can buy a house with a 2-car garage, be able to educate your kids, and be able to take all your family to Hawaii for a few weeks in a year. And so that you are going to retire when you are 65 and you can head down to Arizona and golf for 6 months of the year and then live a happy life and die at 80, 90, whatever. If that's your goal, then great, go the conventional road. And I would suggest to you that if we think in a meta level and we ask ourselves, what's the point of an education for your child or for you, it's about you developing you so that you can do things that are meaningful to you and to your community, so that you have useful purpose in this life. So if you feel meaningful and purposeful in your work and you're able to monetize that, you're able to support yourself and your family, that is like the reason to have an education. But that can take many different forms, can't it? It doesn't have to be a college education. It doesn't have to end with postgraduate work. Success for you is to have you or your child do something that is truly meaningful, truly purposeful, and somehow be able to support yourself and be present in your community and have an influence in your community. And that to me is success. And if that is the intention for education, then how we go about creating that education comes in many different forms. It doesn't have to come with a high school diploma. So I'll let you think about that. If you have any thoughts or you want to make comments, I am happy to take them. I understand that what I just said is pretty, like, you know, it's off the grid anyways. And I've spent 15 years thinking about it. And certainly the work, the written work of Julie Bogart, John Taylor Gatto, and John Holt have strongly influenced how I think about what an education is and why I think it's so important to de-school. So if you've got a question or you've got a comment, please drop it on my Facebook page, Homeschool Mama Self-Care. Okay, so I'm going to move on and tell you that I am presently, like I said, recording and working in this blouse that I haven't washed for weeks in this room for the How to Homeschool 101 course. And the goal of that course is to give you the confidence creating a personalized education for your child, having the vision for your family, the way that you hope to see how your homeschool family will be able to not just create a routine, but what your intention long-term is, what your values and your goals are for your family. If you're interested in that, head on over to my Facebook page again, because you're going to see at the very top an advertisement for the free mini course. So you can download that or enroll or whatever they call it and see what content I have available for the free mini course. And I am going to release the full course within the next couple weeks. I am going to share with you a book that I read early on that had a big impression on me. It's not one of the three books that I shared right before. It's a new book by Rachel Gathercole, and it is called The Well-Adjusted Child. I have the links for this on my blog in a post called Homeschool Mama Reading List. All the really significant books that I would encourage you to read before you get started, you can find on that page. The Well-Adjusted Child, The Social Benefits of Homeschooling. Yay, there's a book on homeschool socialization. I read this years into homeschooling. I was so relieved that someone put this in words. Because one of the most, if I'm honest, annoying questions that we get as homeschoolers is, but what about socialization? And I'm like, okay, I would get that question if you thought my kids were super weird. And they are all like unique in their own ways, but I always had positive feedback that people really like them. They're really engaging. They can talk with adults and they can talk with kids and they're really comfortable and confident, and they're definitely confident. And if they thought they were really awkward, I might get that question, sort of, because I'd also have to make sure that there were no awkward kids in schools. So anyway, The Well-Adjusted Child, this author, Rachel Gathercole, addresses these discussions. She talks about what homeschoolers actually do for socializing. What is good socialization anyways? I think there's often a myth between getting social opportunities for your kids and socializing a human being. I think there's a difference. We have the same opportunities as any family has. They talk about friends and peer contact, about independence and strong family relationships, about bullying, about freedom to just be a kid, have some solitude and quiet, and actually want to connect with other people. They talk about relationships with other adults, about diversity and minority socialization. They have a discussion on preparation for the real world, citizenship and democracy, teenagers' identity and sense of self, and the homeschool parents' social life. I love that. Because I think the biggest misnomer about homeschool socialization is that people are asking kids, but what about your socialization? And I think they should be more concerned about the homeschool mom socialization, because we can get so focused on our work and our role, and there is so much to do, or at least we tell ourselves there's so much to do, and we are driving kids to all sorts of different places, but sometimes we just sit in a car, we sit in a cafe, and we wait, and we're not always connecting with people. So I think there is a genuine concern at times for the self-care or the socialization of the mom, not the kids. Okay, I want to share two paragraphs from this book about socializing in a homeschool lifestyle. The reality is that homeschoolers have a great deal of time to interact and play with peers, since academic work, in whatever form it takes, is much more efficient in a homeschool. Many families do not even separate academic work from other aspects of life, instead combining real-life learning experiences with social life. In fact, many children who have spent time in both homeschool and conventional school say they have not only more time with friends, but also closer friends while homeschooling than they did in school. She has a whole lot more to share in this wonderful book, The Well-Adjusted Child. So today, I am going to discuss with you how to structure a six-year-old's education. I'm going to tell you that unlike most schools, I differ immensely in my opinions on whether or not kids should be taught to read when they are six. I was afraid to bring my child home because I had to teach my three younger kids how to read. That seemed like some sort of box that I couldn't open by myself. Well, it turns out I intended to teach my oldest to read before she went into grade one, because I had heard that her grade one teacher is tricky to deal with. And so I didn't want her to have to deal with potential criticism. So instead, I sat her at a table and got frustrated with her because she wasn't understanding how to read. I don't know what would have happened had I waited, but I can tell you that what happened, because I tried to force reading, is that she started to fog, is what I call it. She just got kind of frustrated, and she made less, she had a less ability. She wasn't as clear in how to engage me, and she got more flustered when having to deal with me because I was trying to force something on her when she wasn't ready. This is a common understanding as a mom of a child that's learning to potty train. You know, you're trying to teach your child to go to the bathroom without a diaper. And what happens? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You can bring them to the toilet and train them to sit on a toilet, but you cannot make them pee. Just like you can bring a horse to water, but you cannot make them drink. But you sure can try. And when you do that, you actually create more challenges for the child to learn, because like I said, they'll get foggy or fluster, get frustrated, and assume that whatever that topic is really difficult to unpackage. And by the way, so will you. You will wonder why your child is not getting it right now. There is a time and a place to get children tested, to assess, to see if there's some learning challenges. But there is also a time and a place to recognize that there's no average in teaching a kid to read. Every kiddo is different. They learn differently. So it turns out my oldest learned to read when she was five or six, pretty typical age. And it wasn't because I was helping her, and it wasn't because the teacher was helping her. It was because she just started reading then. My second daughter, I started earlier, but she was eager. She's always been academically driven, even when she was really little. And so she was 4 when she started reading, taught her some phonics, but she was pretty much reading before I was giving her the basics of phonics. And then when I had my third daughter, I just assumed she'd be a lot older, but it turns out she read on her own when she was 3, and she was reading like little Dora the Explorer books, but she was reading them out loud. And I knew she understood exactly. She was really reading words on the page, and it floored me at 3. I tried teaching her phonics when she was about 4 or 5, and she was not going with me on that. And I finally understood why. Our brains just categorize words and processing differently. And she just thought differently. She whole word read, and phonics was not necessary. Although I still tried to teach her some of that. So by the time my son came around, that was 3 girls that learned fairly, you know, on time and early. Then I assumed that he'd probably be 13 or something, just to balance this all out. And having read the book Better Late Than Early by Raymond Moore, I was convinced that the best choice is to follow how they learn and not try to force something by the time he came along. Always the benefit of the youngest kid, right? And so he actually learned to read later than everybody. He was 6. So we're all different. I know that my kids aren't typical and aren't representative of every child out there. I know there's a lot of kids that have real learning challenges that aren't going to be easily engaged, and that you might sometimes need help to unpack some of that or unravel some of that. But the expectation that there is one age, one grade to learn how to read is a heavy expectation. It obviously speaks volumes to that specific child, because if they aren't on target, then they will get the message, even if they're hearing it for themselves, that they're not average, they're not typical, there's something not quite right. And but if you just wait and watch and read a lot to them, they'll read. So I can tell you a little bit about my child at 6. He is a boy after 3 girls. And so I have to say that I expected there to be a dramatic change, big difference between genders. I'd always heard when I had my first child that boys are really busy. And I remember saying to people that my daughter, my oldest, is really busy. And people would be like, oh, you don't know what busy is unless you've had a boy. But now that I've had a boy, my daughter was really busy. And my son was a lot less so. He did the military crawl by 6 months, and he was on his, you know, he was fast and busy, but he wasn't as physically aggressive as I have often heard boys have been characterized. He's, you know, he 6 months, he could totally throw a ball, and he was impressive with a baseball, but he also loved playing chess. And he's defaulted ever since to more logic-oriented things. He played soccer until he was 8, I think. He retired from choir when he was 7, was not interested in performing. And that's kind of like a nutshell of who he is. He's logically precocious. He loves playing mental games, mental math games. He loves to read. He took until he was 6 to read, but then now he's like the one kid that has spent the most time reading out of all the kids. And he's the one that is most likely to be found squirreled away somewhere reading. At 6, though, he loved his gymnastics class. He canoed and cross-country skied with us. He would learn football strategy with his dad, and he could do tons of board or card games. He also joined in all those sisterly activities. You know, they would paint his nails and dress him up, and they would, you know, throw theater productions together at home, like Shakespeare's The Tempest, and participate in community theater as well when he had to. And here's the things that I learned about him at 6. I learned that he actually is likely to sit still for longer periods than most of his peers. But as a 6-year-old boy it's not typical to be able to sit for a long time. So sitting a child down for a couple of hours to do academics when they're six, it's not necessary. You can get a lot done very quickly if you're really wanting to be intentional about exposing them to, say, handwriting or printing or reading or math, like maybe addition and subtraction, all those concepts. If you want to read to them about history or social studies or science concepts, you can do all sorts of activities, a very solid education for a six-year-old in an hour and a half or 2 hours. I'm not even convinced you need that long. If you're following their interests, you can encourage them in their interests. You can find more resources for them and whatever their interests are. You can learn to identify how their interest in the pond and how, you know, snails grow and where snails live and what their habitats are and what they like to eat. You can follow those learning opportunities and build a science education just on that. It doesn't mean they have to sit at a desk with a big fat red pencil and, you know, spend 20 minutes writing out cursive pages. They just don't need to do that much. If they want to, great. I have had that child too. And she loved to have everything very organized. She had a day timer before she was in junior high and just loved all the details of playing school. Totally fine too. That's great. In fact, it's not just fine. It's great. You're following their learning. You're following their learning opportunities as well. At six, my son could memorize poems just like his older sisters. They have keen minds. If I've learned anything, it is that just because you're six does not mean that you have a less of an ability or an aptitude than someone that's an awful lot older. We just have different aptitudes. When we were sitting around the homeschool table 2 years ago, and he was in grade 5 and his sister was in grade 10, we were doing like a 20-minute geography lesson once a week. My grade 10 daughter had asked me how to spell a word, a fairly large word. And he jumped in and he gave her the exact correct spelling of that word. It's moments like that that remind me that just because there is a large difference in age doesn't mean that there is a huge difference in aptitude. They all process differently. They all focus on different things. They're just different. So he memorized this poem when he was six. When I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now, forever and ever. By A.A. Milne. I love reading those poems with the kids. I would include poetry tea time with the kids whenever I had a chance. In fact, my 19-year-old daughter is coming for a visit home from across the country. And she has even asked if we could do a tea time together. So that's so cool. At six, my son was journaling every morning. Throughout the years, my kids have asked, why do I have to journal in the morning? Why do I have to share my feelings on paper? Well, it's not because I'm going to go open it up and read it, because it's never my intention. If it's accidentally happened, it's never been my intention to read their journals. It's because I want them to develop an emotional intelligence. I've spent my life journaling, so I have learned that writing down what you feel helps you to understand who you are and what's going on inside, and sometimes how to unpack the stuff that's going on inside, which obviously helps in relationships and also helps in general life satisfaction. So I have always encouraged them to journal and will always encourage them to journal. But there was a time, probably he was about six, he obviously wasn't writing full sentences and paragraphs, so he was drawing pictures, and I would write. He would dictate it to me, and I would write what it was he was thinking, or what he was hoping for, or what his plan was for the day. So there was one day he wrote this. It's a football game that you guys are going to, Super Bowl. who you guys are cheering for is the people who are losing, but they will in the end win. Seattle Seahawks will win. Turns out he was prophetic too. They did win. We went to the Super Bowl. So cool. He had his own Matthew C book. Matthew C is a math program that I've been faithful to. It uses manipulatives. As a criticism, I have heard people say that it's pricey, so they don't always want to get into it because it's that. The reason that I have stuck with Matthew C is because I love Steve. Steve has been my math teacher. I did not have a strong math proficiency all the way through high school, probably from grade 2 until high school. I can see I had gaps along the way and it didn't help. We did a lot of moving when I was a kid, so that also didn't help. And I definitely had a bunch of gaps, and I remember specifically being really challenged by double digit subtraction and a variety of other math concepts along the way. And yet I still did pediatric nursing and found a way to use my calculator to properly dose kids. So go figure. You can have gaps and still survive. Not that I recommend that. And yet I have chosen Matthew C and stuck with it because of the different concepts that Steve Demi has taught in Matthew C, like even the placement value, basic stuff that it just made sense when I saw it. And because it made sense to me, I wanted to be an available resource to my kids when they were learning different concepts. If I left it to the devices of my three youngest, they probably didn't need such a formal program because they were always very math proficient. They were comfortable with it. And yet I have maintained it. There was probably a point at grade 8, grade 9 where I no longer actually understand what's going on. And luckily, if my husband or if one of my kids needs something, my husband is definitely able to interact on that. But I've also noticed how sometimes, you know, certain kids transition into being very independent, even in math, and they just do get stuff naturally. And also there are other resource people around in our community that are very capable. They're very eager, proficient math high school students that would be happy to have a tutoring job if you needed that. So at 6 years of age, he was doing flashcards, he was doing addition and subtraction, and learning how to use Matthew C manipulatives, but probably for only 15 minutes in a day. He began reading when he was, well, I told you about the reading. He started with the Dick and Jane because I loved it when I was 6. Thought that was pretty cool. And then he did Dr. Seuss books like Hop on Pop and Toad on the Road and Fat Cat on the Mat. And we did all sorts of games like Bananagrams, Scrabble Slam, and doing kinesthetic approaches to building words with Scrabble tiles. And, you know, it's funny that he could explain reasons for the World War I, the beginning of the World War I. But I discovered one day that even though he knew the reasons that World War I started at age 6, he wasn't able to put his alphabet together. Learning about how our brains organize is really useful as a homeschool mom. There's a book by Barbara Oakley, Learning How to Learn, that is useful for both students, for older students, and for parents to understand how the brain organizes itself so that it can build on different skills and what parts of the brain are actually engaged with different activities. And that's what speaks to me here, that even though he was understanding details about World War I as a 6-year-old and did a ton of reading even then, he had a hard time putting the alphabet, letters of the alphabet together. I've noticed this with math as well. For a long time, I took a really good break from math in the summer because I just thought, well, they needed a break. I needed a break. But what I realized is that if there's too long of a break, they actually lose, they actually forget some stuff. It's like it gets erased from their brains, just like Barbara Oakley says, and learning how to learn. So I maintain math for a lot longer as an activity throughout the year. It's the only one that I am intentional about maintaining, although in short little bursts. But since I saw, you know, they would actually, we'd go through flashcards for multiplication, and I would be in awe that we had done this and they were solid in the understanding for a long time of their times tables. And then all of a sudden they didn't remember them again. I didn't understand that. That was consistent with every one of my kids. We would take them on our trips, and that was probably the only thing that we packed when we went to Africa twice, is some sort of a Kindle with tons of books on it and a pack of times table flashcards. And we would go through those repeatedly, and yet it seemed like it wouldn't stay in their brains. And I've since learned that that's how the brain reorganizes, and that is why it's really necessary to return back to some basic concepts and have that drilled into their heads. At that time, when he was six, we used All About Spelling. It's a program that uses magnetic letter tiles, which my guy was mostly following along his two older sisters. Is he too young for a second language? There's a debate there. I don't think so. There's not much of a debate anymore, because people say that the younger that you start a second language, the better, more beneficial it is for a child. Well, I don't have a second language. I only know a few words in Plattdeutsch. If you know, that's a low German. And yet we did a lot of traveling. So wherever we went, we would study their language. So, you know, obviously we're Canadian, so we've been focusing on French. All you have to do is read the backside of a milk carton and you'll learn a little French. That's not exactly full-on French program, of course, but it's an exposure. We learned Italian for Italy. We learned Swahili for Kenya. We learned Dutch for Amsterdam. Turns out they're actually very English. And even ASL this year, one of the kids decided to do some ASL. We've done Latin all throughout the years. My oldest is actually doing a post-secondary degree and focusing on Latin language now. But at that time, I used Écoute Parler, a program that you can find through a lot of Canadian curriculum providers for French and French flashcards, memory games, Pictionary on a whiteboard, Hangman as well. All sorts of different ways to engage second languages, even for a six-year-old. Of course, your best bet is to actually have a second language and be able to use that regularly with them, or if you have a nanny or some sort of care provider that also speaks a second language, or if you're just simply living in another culture, you're almost guaranteed to learn that language. The other thing we did was science, which he loved. At that time, if anything, he was more likely to read history, as I was sharing earlier, and he just loves reading. So Usborne books cover every science and history idea you can come across, and we have many of them. And if I was to sell you anything, it would be Usborne books. I like them for myself. Well, science, obviously he got to join in on all the experiments that his sisters do. At the time, I had one of the girls was doing a chemistry box, a Chem C500 box. And even though it's well above his processing and the ability to put it all together and write out a lab report and do all that, he was watching them do it. And he was getting an exposure in that as well. And we did all sorts of different science, chemistry, physics, geology, plate tectonics, like astronomy. Really, you name the science topic, we have definitely covered it, because I really like science. And so he's been participating in that as a younger kid. He has gleaned so much. I kind of wonder if younger kids actually get the best education, because you're not only the most aware of what the best resources are for that child, but you're also the least worried about that child, because you've already experimented on the firstborn. And my firstborn is not my experimental child, although she has heard me say that many times. Not so much like experiments in a laboratory, but more, I thought I was going to do everything right, and I'm going to make sure that she does everything right. And turns out that's not a thing. So by the time my fourth comes around, he's not only got a much more relaxed mom, but he's also got a much more detailed education. So that is what, or that's how I approached structuring an academic education for a six-year-old, for my youngest six-year-old. But I want you to consider, again, what's the purpose of an education? It's not about just doing it the way that the conventional schools are doing it. That's not the purpose of the education. You can decide for yourself what you think the best choice is for your child, for your family, based on your interests, your aptitudes, about how you want to approach things and what you want to give for your child. It's your decision. They're your values. You get to decide. And as time goes by, you'll see that allowing them to be fully part of whatever that education is, and even taking the reins of it, is what was meant to be, so that they could grow up to be independent and be able to pursue what everybody talks about, a lifelong learning. They pursue it because they're always doing it. I compiled a homeschool mama reading list on my blog, Capturing the Charm Life, and I offer it to you as a little bit of research before you get started with your homeschooling. And if you think that you need to have it all figured out before you start, don't worry, because reading has never, you know, getting all these ideas has never put all the puzzle pieces together for anybody. Experience is what really will teach you. And you are your child's greatest advocate. I don't need to say that. I know you know that. If you're watching this, if you're interested in how to educate your child, create a personalized education for them, I have a lot more content on my How to Homeschool 101 course, and I invite you to take a look at the mini course before I release the large course. Okay. Did you know that I can talk for so long that I actually get tired of hearing my own voice? It's true. So I'm going to wrap with a self-care strategy before I head to my poolside development, which means that I am actually going to get into my bikini and sit outside with my book and a fizzy drink, and then I'll maybe throw myself into the river for a few minutes to cool down before I have to pick up the kids. So, self-care strategy for the week. First, I want to know, what is a self-care strategy that you're using during this summer? Let me know on my Facebook page, Capturing the Charm Life. Nope. Homeschool Mama Self-Care. Just change that, right? Yeah. Okay, so I am going to suggest that you begin to create a community around you, people surrounding you that are supportive of your homeschool choice. People that care, support, encourage you and your kids in your homeschool journey. I'm not saying to shut people out that aren't in support. There's some pretty important people in your life that gradually they'll probably realize that your kids did just fine. Don't spend a lot of time trying to convince them. You're wasting your energy. You have too much to do. And they'll see. They will see. But in the meantime, build a community of support around you that can help you figure out how to engage your kids the way that you want, to make the choices for their education, for the social opportunities, for creating a family vision and creating the family atmosphere the way that you want to create it. Focus on those things. I am here. Obviously, I'm here as a homeschool coach for you as well. I also recommend, there's so many Facebook threads online, homeschool moms that have been there, done that, that are eager to help you. There's a lot of us that are seeing the huge influx of new homeschool parents or new families looking to consider homeschooling, and we recognize how kind of terrifying sometimes, or terrified people feel at having to make this gigantic choice that they didn't necessarily feel like they were ready for. I know there's some of you out there that were actually thinking about it for a long time and now feel like, yeah, I'm going to do it. But I know there's a whole bunch of people that are like, I don't want to do this, but it seems like the safest choice or the wisest choice. I know you can do it. I'm certain you can do it. Not just saying that. Not just trying to be encouraging for the sake of being encouraging. I have been there, done that. There's a lot of other people before me that have done it. And there's a lot of people that are doing it right now that want to encourage you. So you can find Facebook threads online on Homeschool Everywhere. Of course, I'm going to suggest join mine, Homeschool Mama Self-Care. But, and also check out my podcast, because you'll also be able to listen to some really inspiring women that I'm going to introduce you to, maybe a few men too yet, but inspiring women that share their homeschool stories, their journeys, their children, the things that they're passionate about in homeschooling. They share who they are outside of homeschooling, and they definitely share a bunch of self-care strategies that have value and purpose in your homeschool world. Okay, so I am done for today, and I'm going to go find my book. And I'm going to go sit outside with a fizzy drink and just enjoy the sun while I have it. And I hope you can too. I'm here to help you turn your homeschool challenges into your homeschool charms. And I hope you and your kids have a charmed week. Thanks for joining me.